listen, listen, listen. God is speaking to us.
Kairos Milwaukee United Church of Christ presents Pursued by Goodness, Chased Down by Mercy. The sermon by the Reverend Gene Randall Bodman, presented on Sunday, April 29th, 2018.
Yesterday, a group of seven of us from Kairos, Milwaukee, traveled up to the Dalles to be part of an interfaith crowd of over 270 people who gathered outside of NORCOR, the Northern Oregon Regional Correctional Facility. We gathered to protest activity that appears to us to break the Oregon sanctuary law, both in spirit and in fact. Because this county jail has contracted with ICE to detain immigrants whose only infraction, a civil infraction, is existing in the United States without the proper documentation. We gathered to protest, but perhaps more importantly, we gathered so that those detainees would hear us as we chanted and sang. We gathered so that the chaplains, who are the only ones permitted face-to-face visits, could show them pictures of all the people from across the state, there in person, to say to them, you are not forgotten. You are not alone. You may be in the darkest valley, but God is with you. And God has sent these people to bear witness and to stand in solidarity until a just solution can be created. It was a beautiful and heart-filling day, but I don't want just my experience or just my voice to share it. So I've asked some of the other folks who were there to share what they experienced.
Good morning, my name's Adair Law, and I was happy to be a part of the carpool that Johnette Orpinello so graciously drove. And after I said I would go to up to the Dalles with the group, you know, there's this part of you that's kind of going back and forth with all the stuff that's going on in your own life. But I was thinking to myself, well, at least I'll have a trip up to the Dalles. So that'll be great. And it was just an extravagantly beautiful day. It's one of those times of the year where you can see the greenness on all the hills in the gorge, which is, you know, a beautiful contrast to its usual lovely kind of golden brown color. So we went to a church service, and then we went down to NORCOR, which is on a very plain-looking street in a building that could be any warehouse in any industrial area in the state, pretty much, and stood out there and shook our signs to any people who drove past and shouted and made noise, but it's hard not to look up at a gorgeous blue sky on a day like that and the beautiful green hills and then see the razor wire. I've never seen razor wire up quite up that close before, and that was really stunning. It made me wonder if when they're outside, do they see the razor wire and the blue sky at the same time that I do? I was trying to explain to my father afterwards what I had been doing, and then he asked me, what do you expect the outcome of this all to be? And I didn't really have an answer for him, but I was thinking about that this morning, and I thought, I don't have an answer for what I expect the outcome of prayer to be either, but I still do it, and I felt very grateful to be part of this yesterday.
Good morning. Yes, it was a spiritual day, indeed, and I was really struck by the song we sang just before this, Draw the Circle Wide, because that's probably my most lasting memory of the day, is how wide the circle was of folks who came from all reaches of the state. There were people, and so at one point they asked us to, they used the phrase présente, So, which means, you know, present your, I guess it means, I don't know Spanish, but it means present yourself in terms of the region that you're from. And they would call out the different regions. And so Central Oregon, and you'd hear this huge cry of, we're here. And then from all the other areas of Oregon, Corvallis, Eugene, Central Oregon, Eastern Oregon, of course, Portland. And to me, that was just so expanding to what we're doing here and what we're trying to do to in solidarity, because it was all about solidarity. So draw the circle wide, draw it wider still. Let this be our song, no one stands alone, standing side by side, draw the circle wide. And that's how I felt yesterday. It was a very, very wide circle. I think there were about 240 at the first part of it, which was the ecumenical service, but then it multiplied. Janice thinks that there were maybe 500 people at the actual NorCor protest or vigil, and you may be right. It was amazing. In the very end, we took everyone's photo, a group photo, and it took us like 10 minutes to get to the place where we could actually take a group photo, because there were not only people, but all the signs, and just the energy there was so, it was not only positive, but it was, you know, together and spiritual. It wasn't just people of faith from around the state, but also people, activists there in the Gorge and other activist groups that have been involved in immigration issues. So you felt like the circle was even wider than our spiritual groups, and it was just amazing. And I was going to tell you more detail about each part of the day, but I think the folks, Jeannie and Adair, have done a great job of kind of giving you an overview of what it was like. It was an amazing day.
Well, I was really impressed. This is the first time that I've ever attended something like this. And at the worship service, just to let you know, they raised $2,800. All of that's supposed to go for phone calls at 25 cents a minute. So that was something. And the other thing is we brought flowers from the church, and I got to put them up on the fence. And so the fence was covered with beautiful flowers, and part of our church was represented. The other thing is I had reservations about going. I kept thinking, oh, this is going to be a whole day, and I'm going to get tired. And then my mom's voice rang out, something that she drilled into me. Kathleen, attitude is everything. Attitude is so important. You have to have a good attitude. And she came with me that day.
Good morning. I'm Joni McCullen from the church. And this certainly wasn't my first vigil. I've been doing this for, I think, 18 years in Southern California, as well as going up to Tacoma. And Tacoma, where there's a detention center that houses people from Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Montana. So it takes over four of the states. And this is our own. But what got me just a couple of minutes ago when Jeannie mentioned that this facility is against our own state's sanctuary law. And I don't think many people realize that, how important it is. I've been in a situation where we've housed a person, an immigrant, for 3 years at our church, our UCC church. And during that time, it was incredible, the support that we got from the community as well as our church. When we were on a 24/7 alert that ICE might come and take her away. And it's so incredible, the experience to be able to work with these people who are in the sanctuary movement. And I welcome all of you to consider joining with us next year as we go up to the Dalles. Maybe it won't be there then, who knows? But it would be very nice, and We brought your love with us when we were there, and we felt like we were blessed. And plus, it was sunny, and it was gorgeous out, so you couldn't ask for a better time to be out there supporting the people that are sitting in prison, just wondering what is happening, how their own families are, who they can't even communicate with, and when they get a chance to make a phone call, it costs a fortune. And it's just so unfair, these things that are happening. We just need to be aware of them, and we need to be very supportive of the people that support, as well as our wonderful people who took their time to come and join everybody yesterday. Thanks.
My name is Janice Salyers, and I have kind of a confession I have to make. I was whining on Friday night, kind of the self-whining that, did I really want to go? I don't know, you know, did I really want to go? I had so many things I could do with my Saturday, and I kind of took a moment. I thought, oh, I've got to stop this. I talked to my husband. He says, you really ought to go. And so I went, got into bed, and I thought, okay, closed my eyes, and this voice suddenly tells me, you need to go, out of nowhere. So I went, and it was a great experience. It was. It was a beautiful sunny day. The mist was in the gorge, down the hills. The sky was blue. It was beautiful. When we got there, there were two experiences that I think really stood out to me, and the first one was, we were in the sanctuary, and at one point, the minister who was speaking, he had us turn to the person next to us and tell them why we came, what our motivation was. And I looked to my right, I looked to my left. I had Macy and Pastor Jeannie on one side and this couple on the other side, kind of stuck in the middle. And I'm thinking, oh, maybe I won't have to say anything, you know, a little bit. Well, this hand reaches over from my left and he goes, hi, I'm Neil. And hi, I'm Janice. And he says, where are you from? From Portland. He was from Corvallis. He had come with his wife. And so I started off, I kind of stammered through, why did I come? I was here with my church and I wanted to participate with my friends, and on this kind of broken up thought process that I had going on in it. And I asked him, I said, and how about you? And he says, you know, he said, I'm here because of this lady right here. And in this climate today, under 45, I have complained about so many things, but not done anything about it and not participated. He says, so today I'm putting my money where my mouth is. And I thought, wow, that said it all for me. That really did. A little later in the service, there was a gentleman by the name of Juan Carlos who spoke. And he talked about the people who have disappeared, who have been desaparecidos throughout Latin America, throughout the world. The numbers are staggering. I just want to read a couple of them for you. In Mexico, more than 26,000 people were reported missing or disappeared between 2006 and 2012. Today, that number stands at over 100,000. In Mexico. In Syria, 75,000 people unaccounted for. In Sri Lanka, 30,000. In Argentina, at least 10,000, as possibly as many as 30,000. In Colombia, 28,000. In El Salvador, 10,000. And we wonder why these people come, why they give up everything to come to the United States, where there is a possibility of a chance for a life. It's really important. The second thing that he said, and I thought this was really wonderful, he was talking about dealing with these families who've had people who have been desaparecidos from their life, usually forcibly disappeared, and that it leaves a hole in their family, and that becomes kind of a blessing in itself. They have that presence because their family members are constantly questioning, constantly wondering where they are. But he said when he joined those families with other families who had come together, that became something sacramental, kind of a sacramental blessing to have that knowledge and kept that memory of those folks alive. And that, regardless of their status, they will not be forgotten.
Well, that's a lot to follow. But let's go back to that psalm we read. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. She makes me lie down in green pastures. She leads me beside still waters. She restores my soul. The beautiful, beloved 23rd Psalm. This 3,000-year-old poem that reaches across the centuries with its calm and certainty that no matter what depths and scary places we pass through in life, God, like a tender shepherd, will be with us, leading us, helping us to find the pools of still water, safe to drink and safe to cross, lush green meadows where sheep can lie down. They can set aside their eternal vigilance and eat and sleep in peace and ease. Because sometimes this life makes us feel like sheep, fidgety, easily bewildered, and prone when spooked to run into all the wrong places. What a relief it is to think of the steadfast shepherd who knows what lies ahead, who, unlike us, is not afraid, who will do for us the hard work of forging a path and let us follow meekly behind. The Lord is my shepherd. I want for nothing. It's so good. Let's just soak that in. Just swim in it till our fingers get all pruny. Quiet assurance, calm and safety. It's balm for the weary soul. Now that's a good reading of that text. But it's not the only one. The psalm promises us something even better than calm, something bolder than stillness. Because the 23rd Psalm can also be read as a statement of God's fierce love that goes with us as we journey through life, a love that accompanies us through suffering and fear, through enmity and alienation, a love that takes us, yes, to still waters and green pastures for moments of repose and for moments of refreshment, but more stays with us the whole journey long. Because the rest in green pastures is temporary. The psalmist is busy. He's walking and journeying and traveling through valleys. And even when we come to the end, goodness and mercy following us and dwelling in the house of the Lord all the days of our life, even that is less static than it might sound. A little dive into the Hebrew of the text offers up some alternate translations of key words. Goodness and mercy, they are not following gently behind us. They are pursuing us and chasing us down. And rather than just passively dwelling in the house of the Lord forever, we will keep continually returning to God's presence. The end of the psalm is not the end of the journey. Seeking after God's presence is a lifelong enterprise, a long-term journey. And all along the way, goodness and mercy will be chasing us down, helping us to find that right path. And here again, the Hebrew helps us. The word that gets translated paths is translated in other places in the Hebrew scripture as tracks or grooves or even ruts, the kind of ruts that are made by an ox cart, like the ruts that we can still see a century after their last use in the Oregon Trail. Walking with God is to find your righteous groove. And to live in that righteous groove is to live in a way that promotes and sustains right relationship all around you, with the community, with the earth, and with God. Listening to the gospel witness beside the psalm, we are reminded that Jesus is not only our good shepherd, but the trailblazer of the paths of righteousness. And we are promised a life in which, no matter what paths of righteousness we are bold enough to walk down, the Good Shepherd will guide us through. This psalm was echoing through my mind yesterday on the drive through the gorge, which, as Adair mentioned, was alight with 1,000 shades of green, draped in mist and fog that lifted as we passed into the dalles and the bright, breezy sunshine shone down on us. The psalm was echoing through my mind with both the reassurance of it and the bold challenge of it. As we gathered at St. Paul's and listened to the stories of the detained and of the local clergy who have been visiting them, the Lord is with me, I shall not want. As we gathered on the street with our signs and our flowers, our songs and our chants, greeted by people driving by with cheerful honks and thumbs up, and people driving by with sneers and rude hand gestures, he makes me lie down in green pastures. As we stood in front of fences topped with razor wire, new and clean and shiny and lethal, fences surrounding clean new buildings in landscape between beautiful low ridges, soul-crushing in their windowlessness, he leads me beside still waters. She restores my soul. I was comforted and I was challenged, because here is a truth I hate to confess. I know what the biblical witness is about immigrants and refugees. Right through the law and the prophets to the teachings of Jesus, I hear the call for God's people to welcome and protect the refugee and the immigrant. Because the people of God were once exiles and were once strangers in the land. Because Jesus said, "What you do to the very least of these, my sisters and brothers, you do that to me." It's not even a little bit mysterious what we are called to do. And yet, if you are anything like me, you hear other voices arguing inside your mind about the impracticality of this. Well, the irresponsibility of just thinking that any one country can be expected to welcome everyone. On the one hand, the voice of Scripture and the impulse of a heart raised on texts and tradition of extravagant welcome. And on the other hand, a second, frightened voice saying, "Well, we can't welcome everyone. There just aren't enough resources." It's fascinating what dark corridor I can find myself in when I allow the fear of scarcity to enter my mind and begin to chase me down, until I get to the anxiety that for others to live, maybe I will have to give something up. Maybe I will have to let go of some of the stuff of my life. And immediately, I think, like most people, I suspect, I like my stuff, my lifestyle. I want to protect it. My pleasant house with the quiet dining room and the cheerful kitchen and family room. I love my stacks and stacks of books. The piano I cannot play, but which moved from my beloved aunt's house to my mother's house to my house. The dishes and silver that were my mother's too. All of it. And I am tempted just not to think about it at all, about the fact that here on God's one earth, I have so much while others have so little. Not by any superior work of mine. Impoverished people work much longer, harder, more arduous hours than I do. And not by any superior virtue of mine. But by the luck of birth alone, I live where and how I do. Yesterday, in the faces of the people, Buddhists, Jews, and Quakers, atheists, Lutherans, Catholics, and dozens of members of the UCC, in the signs and songs and genuine love and care in every voice that spoke, goodness and mercy chased me down. Goodness pursued me so that I came face to face with my fear of scarcity. That dull, stubborn, mean little voice inside saying, well, what if the whole world wants to come here? There won't be enough land or water or jobs. And then mercy caught me in its arms and helped me to laugh at my own anxiety and step back into the joy of community. The ruts of my life brought me safe through the valley of my fear and back into the presence of God. That presence shining in all the faces around me, singing in the landscape, beating in the hearts of the people who are detained. I pray that God will use my hands and voice and heart to reflect that the love and solidarity that I received to people whose journey is not only in their minds, but is made up of long treks through dry land to find a space to live, to work, and to provide homes and schools for their children. To people whose dark valley is the ice agent at the door, and weeks and months and even years of separation from their families, from spouses and parents, and even infant children. I pray that God will use all our hands and voices and hearts to work for a world where God's provision is trusted and the abundance of the earth is shared, where each one sits under their own vine and fig tree with no one to make them afraid. May goodness and mercy pursue us when we leave the path of righteousness and drive us straight back into the open arms of the Good Shepherd. And let the people say, Amen.
Listen, listen, listen. God is speaking.